Long before the borrowed flame could warm a crowded sky.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Okay, let's start today with a bit of an identity crisis. When you look in the mirror, you see a human, a single individual. But biology, well, biology sees a chimera.
A complete mashup.
Exactly, we're this bizarre, intricate mix of totally different lineages. We aren't just bacteria, and we aren't archaea, we're something else.
And the biggest question in evolutionary biology, I mean, the one that drives people a little crazy, is how did that mashup actually happen?
It really is the ultimate cold case. We know what the event was, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
At some point deep in the past, a simple host cell merged with a bacterium.
And that bacterium became the mitochondrion.
A powerhouse of the cell.
Yeah.
And that one merger created the eukaryotes. That's us, trees, mushrooms, basically everything you can see with the naked eye.
Right, so the merger isn't the debate. We know we have mitochondria inside us right now, literally powering this conversation. The debate is the timing.
And this is where it gets contentious. Did the powerhouse arrive first, you know, providing the energy to build a complex cell?
Mm-hmm.
Or was the cell already building a mansion, already complex, before the power plant was ever installed?
It's the cellular version of the chicken and the egg.
Good.
Precisely.
And the stakes here feel huge. This isn't just about categorizing slime molds. This changes the entire narrative of life on Earth.
It does.
It asks a really fundamental question. Is complex life a lucky accident caused by a sudden energy boost?
Yeah.
Or does life have this innate tendency toward complexity, even without that boost?
It challenges that whole energy first definition of life. If you absolutely need that power plant to build the factory, then complex life might be incredibly rare in the universe.
Because that merger is a freak accident.
A total freak accident.
But
if you can build the factory first, well, that changes the odds significantly.
Today, we're going to crack that black box wide open. We're diving into a paper published in Nature in 2025. It's titled, Dated Gene Duplications Elucidate the Evolutionary Assembly of Eukaryotes.
It's from a really impressive team. Christopher J.K., Anja Spang, and a whole group of colleagues from the University of Bristol and NIOZ in the Netherlands, among others.
And what's so cool here is they didn't just look at fossils, because, I mean, let's be honest.
There aren't any. Not for what we're talking about. Instead, they looked at the genetic scars left behind by evolution right inside living cells today.
Okay, so let's set the scene before we get to their data. The big problem here is that we have no missing links alive today. We have the simple stuff, bacteria and archaea, and we have the complex stuff, eukaryotes. But the middle ground.
It's empty, gone. The intermediate steps are extinct for billions of years. And because there's no physical record, we've been left with two warring hypotheses.
Walk me through them. What are the two camps?
So first, you have the mitochondria early camp. It's often called the hydrogen hypothesis. The narrative here is that a simple host cell acquired the mitochondrion almost immediately.
So instant gratification.
In a way, yeah. The idea is that this sudden flood of energy let the cell expand its genome, build new things, and become complex. Energy drives innovation.
Without the battery, you can't run the complex software.
That's the idea. And the opposition.
What's the other side?
Mitochondria late. This theory argues that the host cell, and we think it was an Asgard archaeon, had already evolved a skeleton, a nucleus, internal plumbing, all before it ever ate or merged with the mitochondrion.
So in that version, the host was already a sophisticated fixer-upper house.
That's a great analogy. It just needed to get connected to the electrical grid.
And the key players we need to keep in mind
are the Asgard archaea, that's the ancestor of the host, and a group called the alpha proteobacteria, that's the ancestor of our mitochondrion.
This is where I start to get skeptical. How can we possibly know the order of events? You can't just, you know, carbon date a single cell that died 2 billion years ago. If there are no fossils, aren't we just guessing?
We aren't guessing. We're using a molecular clock. But this team used a really specific type of clock that's much more precise for this question. They tracked gene duplications.
Okay, unpack that. How does a duplicate gene tell time?
Well, think of it this way. If you have one gene doing a really vital job, say, holding the cell wall together, it can't change much. If it mutates, the organism dies. It's under what we call negative selection.
It's stuck in its job.
It's totally stuck. But when that gene duplicates, suddenly you have a spare. The original keeps doing the vital job. But the copy is free.
Oh,
it's free to mutate, to mess up, or to take on a completely new job. It's free to innovate.
So a gene duplication is basically a footprint of biological innovation.
Precisely. If we can date when a gene duplicated, we can date when that innovation probably happened. It's like finding the receipt for a roof rack, you know, the person probably owned a car by that date.
I see. But how do they attach actual years to this? Genetic mutations don't come with a calendar timestamp.
They use a technique called cross-bracing. It's brilliant. They take known geological fossil calibrations, I mean hard dates from the rock record that we are absolutely sure of, and they use them to anchor the genetic tree.
It forces the two clocks to sync up.
Exactly. It forces the genetic clock to align with the geological clock, and that makes the timing surprisingly accurate.
Was this a small sample size? Just a handful of genes?
Oh no, they went big. They analyzed 62 marker genes across the entire tree of life. They built 135 different time-resolved gene trees, a huge data set.
Okay, before we get to the results, we need to define some terms. The paper uses a few acronyms to mark the timeline, and I want to make sure we have these straight so we can, you know, visualize what's happening.
Right, we need to know three nodes on the timeline. Think of it like a family tree. First, there is Enfeca. That's the nuclear first eukaryotic common ancestor.
Nuclear first. So this is the moment our lineage split from the rest of the archaea.
Correct. The birth of the host lineage. Second is Enfeca, the mitochondrial first eukaryotic common ancestor.
And that's when the mitochondrion's ancestors split from other bacteria.
Yep. The birth of the power plant lineage. And finally, LSE, the last eukaryotic common ancestor.
The grandmother of every complex cell alive today.
That's the one. That's the point where the merger is fully complete and modern eukaryotic life begins.
Okay, lay the numbers on me. What did the timeline actually reveal?
This is where the mitochondrial theory just runs into a brick wall. The data shows that the host lineage, Enfeca, split from archaea between 3.05 and 2.79 billion years ago.
3 billion years ago.
Yeah.
That is incredibly old, almost half the age of the Earth.
It is. Now, compare that to Enfeca, the bacterial split for the mitochondrion. That happened between 2.37 and 2.13 billion years ago.
Wait. Do that math again. 3 billion versus what, 2.2 billion?
It's a huge gap.
That's roughly an 800 million to a 1 billion year gap between the host starting its journey yep. and the mitochondrion even becoming a thing.
Exactly.
So this just destroys the idea of a simultaneous merger. The host was out there on its own for nearly a billion years.
That's what the data says.
But that opens up an even bigger mystery. What on earth was happening during that billion years?
Yep.
Was the host just sitting there? Twiddling its thumbs waiting for a battery?
Not at all. And this is the smoking gun of the paper. They looked at those gene duplications we talked about. They found the host was incredibly busy before that 2.2 billion year mark.
Busy doing what?
Major construction. Renovation. Let's start with the cytoskeleton. You know, the internal scaffolding that gives a cell its shape.
Sure, actin and tubulin. The stuff that lets our cells move and hold their structure.
Right. The study found that the gene for actin duplicated around 2.8 billion years ago. Tubulin expanded between 2.8 and 2.2 billion years ago.
So long before the mitochondrion ever arrived, this host cell was building a skeleton.
And not just a statting one. The specific types of actin that developed are used for branching filaments. That implies the cell could actively change its shape. It potentially had a primitive phagocytosis.
It could eat.
It likely could. It wasn't just a passive blob. It was probably an active predator or scavenger.
That's a game changer. If it could eat, that totally explains how it might have acquired the mitochondrion later on. It just swallowed it.
Or entangled it, yeah. But it had the mechanical ability to physically interact with the world.
Okay, what about the plumbing? Complex cells have all these internal compartments, the Golgi, the ER. That takes a lot of coordination.
They looked at that too, the endomembrane system. They tracked the genes responsible for trafficking materials, things like STX5 and RB proteins. These genes duplicated between 2.8 and 2.3 billion years ago.
Again, right in that billion year gap, before the mitochondrion.
Yep. The host was developing a way to move things around inside itself. It was building an internal shipping network, basically the Amazon logistics network inside a microscopic blob.
And the control center. The nucleus. I mean, that's the defining feature of being a eukaryote.
The team found that the machinery for the nucleus, things like RNA polymerase, splitting into its specialized versions, and the nuclear pore components, those duplicated around 2.9 billion years ago.
This paints such a vivid picture. We have a cell with a skeleton, with internal shipping lanes, a control center, and it's still running on an old archaeal metabolism.
It appears so. A sophisticated, complex organism running on an older, less powerful energy model.
Well, wait, isn't that energetic suicide? We've always been told that having a big genome and a nucleus is incredibly expensive. How does an archaeon afford a mansion on a minimum wage energy budget?
That is the million-dollar question. It suggests that maybe these structures weren't as expensive in their primitive forms as we thought. Or maybe that archaeal metabolism was more efficient than we give it credit for. But eventually, a limit was reached.
So when does the mitochondrion finally show up to save the day?
The data points to a big spike in bacterial gene duplications right around 2.2 billion years ago.
2.2 gam.
And this aligns perfectly with the duplication of the machinery needed to import proteins into a mitochondrion, the Tim and Pam complexes. You don't build a door for a guest who hasn't arrived yet.
And 2.2 billion years ago, that date rings a bell in geology. That's very specific.
It should. It coincides almost perfectly with the Great Oxidation Event, the GOE.
The moment the Earth rusted.
The moment oxygen levels on Earth started to rise. And you have to remember, for many ancient life forms, oxygen is toxic.
Okay, let's connect all this to the bigger picture. The energy-first theory, is it dead?
Effectively, yes. The authors state pretty clearly that their data rejects the mitochondria early scenarios.
It's a eulogy for the energy-first hypothesis.
Instead, it supports what they call the CALM model, Complexified Archaean Late Mitochondrion.
I like that. It sounds peaceful, but it's actually revolutionary.
It really is. The insight here is profound. The host cell didn't need the energy boost to start becoming complex. It needed the complexity to acquire the energy boost.
That completely flips the script. You need the skeleton and the ability to eat the phagocytosis to even capture the bacterium in the first place.
Exactly. And think about the environment. This host evolved in the Archaean Eon. The oceans were anoxic. No oxygen.
So for a billion years, our ancestor was living in an oxygen-free world, slowly renovating its house by candlelight.
And then the Great Oxidation Event happens. Oxygen floods the system, and suddenly, having a bacterial partner that can handle oxygen or process nutrients with it becomes a massive advantage.
The paper mentions syntrophy. What does that mean here?
Syntrophy just means feeding together. The relationship probably didn't start as some kind of master-slave power plant installation. It likely started as two organisms sharing nutrients. You know, one's waste is the other's food.
A metabolic roommate situation.
Which eventually became permanent. The host provided protection and raw materials. The mitochondrion provided clean energy processing in this new oxygen-rich world.
This is incredibly compelling, but we have to be good scientists here. What are the limitations? Why isn't this case just closed?
Well, the biggest limitation is still the fossil record, or the lack of one. We are inferring these structures from genes. We don't have a fossilized photograph of a cell from 2.5 billion years ago with a nucleus but no mitochondria.
Right. We're trusting the math of the molecular clock.
And while the phagocytosing archaeon hypothesis is supported, meaning the host could eat, we can't definitively prove that phagocytosis was the cause of the uptake. It might have happened another way.
But the timeline itself is the strongest evidence we've ever had.
It is. The sequence of events is hard to argue with. Skeleton first, membranes first, nucleus first, mitochondria second.
So if we had to summarize the central insight, the take-home message.
Eukaryogenesis, the origin of us. It wasn't a sudden big bang from a merger. It wasn't a lucky lightning strike. It was a slow billion-year slog. An archaeal cell spent eons building a complex house, putting up the drywall, installing the plumbing, and then around 2.2 billion years ago, it finally installed the high-voltage electrical grid.
It changes how we view our own history. We aren't the children of some lucky accident. We are the result of a billion years of architectural hard work.
And that hard work paid off. Once that electrical grid was installed, complexity exploded, but the foundation was already there.
This brings me to a thought I want to leave with you. We often look at the stars and wonder if complex life is rare, because that merger of two cells is so unlikely. But if complexity can start evolving without that mitochondrial power boost, if a cell can build a skeleton and a nucleus on its own, what does this mean for the probability of complex life on other planets where that specific merger might not have happened? Are there complex low-energy aliens floating in anoxic oceans right now, just waiting for a battery? This episode was based on an open-access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
the borrowed flame could warm a crowded sky. Architects of membrane and mesh reached out quietly and shy. They carved small rooms inside a single breath and spun filaments like rope, building inner worlds in ocean hush, patient as deep stone and hope. Duplications like echoes folded new hands to take the lead. A half door opened between thought and deed. Vesicles learned to carry letters, import and send them through. All the pieces found their calls, waiting for a different view. We found them rising, cells that knew how to keep their light. Before the partner came, they had already learned to write. A quiet making, patient and immense, then history ignites. Hold the wonder, life stitched rooms into the night. Like rivers that could fold and pull and dream. Turbulent columns ordered patterns in a trembling seam. Membranes braided pathways where soft messages could flow. A host already busy carrying futures in the slow. Billions of winters folded into a single apprenticeship. Then a small bright other slipped into the architecture ship. Not the maker of the plan, but the spark that changed the tune. Together they learned a new choreography, and life took room.
We heard the ancient chorus,
a code that learned to rhyme.
Hands of protein, rooms of membrane,
took their shape in silent sky. Sudden burst, a lineage redefined. Remember this complexity began before the light we call a mind.